2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
I was took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzard tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use in jiving? Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top." The buzzard told the monkey, "You are choking me. Release your hold and I will set you free." The monkey looked the buzzard right dead in the eye and said, "Your story's quite touching, but it sounds like a lie."
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
Straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, straighten up. Straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, right.
Oh, straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, right. Straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, straighten up, fly, right.
Choking me, release your hold and I will set you free. The monkey looked the buzzer right dead in the eye and said,
"Story's so touching, but it sounds like a lie." Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Fly right.
Yeah, good advice. Saturday morning, it's summertime. Summertime and the living is uncomfortable. But we live through it. I mean, you know, it doesn't kill you. It just is miserably uncomfortable. So last week, of course, we had Jim Dill on. We're talking about ticks, ticks, and more ticks. I avoid tick areas because I don't want to deal with them. So I go to work, which is where I spend most of my time outdoors. I come in and park my car on this paved driveway, right? I walk into the office, turn on the computers and whatever. I'll walk across the parking lot, go to my shop, and work in there. So, and then in back of the shop, we have an area where we keep stuff, cars and stuff. And that's got a sort of a crushed granite a driveway. No real vegetation there. And I was back there for a moment, come back out, and I'm walking into the office. I had a customer come in. And the customer reaches over on my gets something off my shoulder. It's a tick. I've got a tick on my damn shoulder. Well, wait a minute. There's no way a tick has transited my entire height pretty much and gotten on my shoulder. So I go in the office and we were doing whatever. I tell Maria, "Hey, there's a tick on my shoulder." She says, "Oh, a bird dropped it." "Oh, good. Let's get him coming from the sky." That's what we need is ticks, airborne ticks, because, you know, it's not enough. Straighten up and fly right, indeed. That made my day. So then, of course, I'm itchy for the rest of the day. But anyway, we lived through it. It's okay. It's all right. So a couple things going on this week. It was a slower week. The weather was hotter, and we didn't seem to get as much accomplished. And we did get the smart car back. We were doing stuff to it. I pulled it in the shop. There were a couple of things I knew needed to be done before it would be inspectable. I'm going to have one of my other mechanics go over it. Already had one go through it. And we had a headlight out. I fixed that. And none of the rear lights worked. The brake lights and the turn signals, just bulbs. So, but it's kind of a tricky deal to get to the bulbs. So I figured that out, got that done. Got the car cleaned up, put it together. All the lights work. And the one thing I've still been challenged with, and it's going to drive me crazy because this is close to heart. I'm Tom. I'm on the radio. I'm on the radio. I'm speaking to you, the people of the state of Maine, on Saturday morning. And the one thing that's driving me crazy is the radio. The radio in the smart car only plays Russian music, only displays in Russian, and I can't get it sorted out yet. It seems to me it's got a Russian radio. I've had the radio out because I was chasing wires, there was a rear speaker at some point in the car. That's gone. So I wanted to disconnect, unplug it. I did that. It looks like a regular radio, but it's all Russian. It's going to be what it's going to be. Hopefully I'll figure it out, but it's just been like, man, now, I'm already pulling my hair out about other stuff. I can't afford to do that, but it's good. The thing is, other than the fact I can't read Cyrillic or Russian, I kind of like the music. It's very Russian sounding. I don't want to say it's Bolshevik sounding, but maybe it is. I wouldn't know Bolshevik music if it hit me in the head, but maybe it has hit me in the head. Maybe that's the problem. So, as I drive around, obviously you take in the sights, you see things. I see things, I drive by with some regularity, a place where apparently the homeowner hired someone with a excavator to sort out a shed that was on the property, an older building, and an outbuilding. It was somebody's workshop at some point. It's got a masonry chimney, and it's a shame to see an old building kind of falling into the ground. And so this was dug out, cleaned up. There was stuff growing up around it, not good for the longevity of the building. So all that got cleared away. They dug out around the foundation. They got it up on cribbing, and the building was still okay. Oh, cool. Somebody is fixing this building. That's great. It's a shame to waste a building that could be used, especially like a little workshop. It's got a chimney. You can have a wood stove. I mean, what a great place to be. A man cave, a she shed, whatever you want to call it. Just, you own the structure. It's right there. So somebody's paying to have this done. And there's a tail associated with this. But I've got to take a break. So, I haven't learned anything. I know how to do the hook at 8:15 on Saturday morning. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning, and I'm Tom, and I'll be right back.
Summer days, oh summer days. In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find.
Okay, it's 8:18, hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again, I'm Tom. So I was talking about somebody's fixing up a shed. That's nice. All dug out, all up in the air. It's got cribbing underneath, and I see a form go in. Somebody had built a form to put the building on. And it appeared to be two by something. And it was parallel with the road. And, okay, it looks like they're building a form. A couple days later, I go by again. I can see the concrete had over the top, you know, a little slop. Okay, cool. Form's done. It's been poured. Go by a couple days later, I see a sill. Now, just to give some lay of the land here. We got the ground. We got the form sticking out of the ground, maybe, I don't know, 5 inches. And then there's what I think is probably a 6x6 rough sawn timber sitting on top of that form. So the bottom of the timber, this new sill, excuse me, is 5 inches off the ground. And it's just a regular timber. It's hemlock or something like that. Now, hemlock will last a while, but it's too close to the ground. So okay, well I'm wincing at that a little bit. Pressure treated lumber isn't the cheapest stuff in the world. It's not the greatest lumber. A nice piece of slow-grown hemlock is certainly a good timber, but that close to the ground, no. No, okay. But Tom, calm down. It's somebody else's shed. It's not my shed. A couple more days go by. I drive by. I notice that timber that's on the foundation, such as it is the outside edge is even with the form, which is still in place. The form is staying there. The form ain't pressure treated either. Now I'm starting to get kind of, should I go knock? I can't go knock on somebody's door, no. And whoever's doing this is supposedly a professional. And this is where we come into code. You know, a lot of people aren't crazy about having to deal with code people. And this is not a residence. This is a shed. So, okay. You know, if I'm spending the money to pay somebody to come in with a nice piece of equipment, do all this great groundwork, why would I be penny wise and pound foolish and not spend a couple of bucks extra and have them use pressure treated? It's not a big deal. It's not perfect material, but it's way better than just having a regular 2x that's going to be spruce fir in the ground, not potentially in contact. It's in the ground. I mean, and it's planed. It's a piece of dimensional lumber. And I'm trying to. So I'm looking at it even more. I'm slowing down as I drive. I realize they've only done two opposite walls for the foundation. The other sides are open. Maybe that's okay. I don't know. But I'm not. I'm trying to be calm. So a couple more days go by, and there's a piece of, I think, 1x10 as sort of a bottom trim board that's kind of going over the sill that, again, is really close to the ground. And, I'm just going to stay calm. Not going to talk about it anymore. You know, the thing is this. And it's good practice, and the code issue is if this was a house, you have to be a minimum of 8 inches off the ground with lumber. stuff that could rot. That's a good standard. It's not perfect because I don't think that's enough. But, I mean, we have to kind of be practical about these things. It probably should be more than that. It's been my experience that when it rains, you get splashing. And it'll splash up onto the wood. But, you know, if it's set up in a way that it can dry, okay. But that's, you know, the pressure-treated lumber in that area, 8 inches and under, makes perfect sense. Likewise, and this is just personal bias, you may agree or disagree with it, I really like in that realm of being up maybe 16 inches off the ground to use a cellular PVC trim board for that bottom edge, just because it's impervious to water. It'll, you know, look decent. It's not going to do anything weird. It'll hold paint really well. You know, painting PVC is not ideal, but it's not hygroscopic, so it will hold paint. It could physically lose the paint, but it's stable. That kind of makes sense. It's again, you know, we do the thing we have that is wonderful. There's a lot of things that we could say are terrible about life, but the one thing that we have that we continue to see, I think, improve is materials technology, especially as it relates, and materials science, building science, as it relates to our homes and other buildings. We've come to learn about the fact that, and this is a simple comment to make, but there's a lot of science behind it, water can be a problem. So there's usually in new construction, not always, but the ideal is to have some kind of drainage plane behind whatever the siding is, because we know water will penetrate sidings that are on a building. And if it can drain from behind and there's a little bit of an airspace there, it can dry out, minimize the problem with paint popping off, keep the building dry, minimize the issue of buildings rotting, where moisture can get trapped behind siding, behind trim. We've learned that over the years as we've done things to houses to try to save energy. A lot of times, years ago, you just wrap the building with styrofoam and call it done. And if you put wood siding over that, without an airspace, you get in the mischief. Simple. It seems simple in hindsight until we have, you know, had to spend a lot of time and money remediating those kind of problems and fixing what should otherwise be obvious. So, anyway, Dick Hill had a term. He said his thing for long life is I should have them all written down. I don't, but the third one was to live in a state of constant outrage. So I guess I've done that. I've accomplished one of the three. I think the other was a low-fat diet, and I'll have to dig that one up. And it's simple. I mean, pressure-treated lumber, again, is one of those materials we have in our arsenal that we use. There's a reason when you do a new building, the sill plate has to be pressure-treated. Speaking of materials science and stuff in general, as I glue things together, as I'm making banjos, the adhesive I like to use is Tight Bond 2. It's a water resistant glue. It's kind of like Elmer's, but it's Elmer's on steroids. And I got a big bottle of it and I like working with it. You can, you know, position it, clamp it, whatever. But it's been advised that I should be using super glue, cyanoacrylate adhesive. And I do use it. I always have it on hand. The problem I have with it is I inevitably will glue my fingers together or my clothing. I get it on my clothes and then my clothes are no longer flexible. But my friend Dick says, you should use it. The shorthand for cyanoacrylate is CA. You got to use CA. It's just so much faster. And you got to use the accelerant. Now, if I take super glue and do something, inevitably my fingers are stuck together. I swear to God, it happens every time. It dribbles there, a little drip. I don't even see it. Next thing I know, my fingers are stuck together. So, and then it's on your hands and it hardens up instantly. So I got a gallon of acetone at home now. I have acetone at work. I got a gallon just for home to clean it off as soon as it forms so I can unglue myself. Well, Dick says, well, use the accelerant. And the accelerant, you have a little bit of work time with CA glue, not a lot. The accelerant, you have no work time. So I'm using it last night. And I you know, since I got the accelerant, I haven't glued my fingers together. But I I've got these pieces of wood. I've got a piece of plywood I'm gluing pieces of oak to. And I'm being very, so you put a little accelerant down, put the CA glue on the piece you're going to glue, and just set it in place, and it instantly sticks. Now, this is convenient as all get out, except if you're Tom. and you miscalculate where it's going. Once it's down, brother, it ain't coming up. So I did okay. I had one that seemed a little bit off. I said, well, I'm not getting out the chisel because that's what it takes to take it apart. And it's quite impressive. And, I was shopping around for the accelerant. I couldn't find it. I got online. I found it. I wound up getting on eBay where there are a number of vendors. And you can buy quantities. And there's a wide range of viscosity of the adhesive. Because, you can get if you don't know this, you're going to know it now. You can get a liquid super glue, which is just kind of flows like water. That's the one that's really good for me for sticking my fingers together because it flows so quickly. Or you can get a gel super glue, which is like, jelly. And it is easier to work with, and that's what I've used a lot. But if you get online, and I found it on eBay, a lot of vendors sell grades of viscosity. And it's convenient. And apparently a lot of people use this for putting things like drones together. If you're a drone hobbyist, or maybe you make model airplanes or something, this is the adhesive of choice because you just stick it and you just keep right on rolling. You know, if I'm using tight bond, I clamp it and then come back to it over, after it sits overnight. And God knows I'm not patient. But we got to take a break. It is hot and cold. I'm way over time here. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 8:36. It's hot and cold Saturday morning over on line one. Is that you, Mike?
Mike? This great song to play me on with. Thank you.
Do you know who that is? Can you identify those artists?
Well, I can identify the songwriter, John Lennon, but I'm going to say Grapefruit.
No, it's actually Dave Grohl and Jeff Lynne.
Oh, what? Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters with Jeff Lynne of ELO?
Yeah, is that something else or what?
That's wild. Yeah. Now, where did that come from?
I don't know. This was some kind of Beatles tribute from 9 years ago.
Wow, I need to look that up.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah, so Do Hey Bulldog Jeff for all, Dave Grohl, and you'll find it.
All right.
But,
well, as you may know, I am here at Bangor Humane Society, Mount Hope Avenue in Bangor, and it's a busy day. We got a lot of people here, but good. We have a lot of animals here. Hmm. At the moment, if you look at our website, bangorhumane.org, you'll notice we have 36 cats on the website, and those are just the ones that are ready to be adopted right now. We have more that aren't quite ready, but that's a lot. Not all of them have photos yet. The photos will be coming soon, mm-hmm. but whether you're looking for a kitten, maybe you're looking for a cat that's a few years old, personality is already developed, maybe you're looking for an older, quieter, calmer cat. You know, depending on what your lifestyle is like, we've got the perfect feline match right here for you at Bangor Humane Society, Tom.
Okay, that's good to know. I haven't looked. I looked at the dog we talked about, but I haven't looked at the cats, and I will next break.
Well, yeah, I stopped over at the station this morning, and I was telling you about Beatrice, this incredible two-month-old puppy that we have waiting to be adopted. And she just went up for adoption, just went on the website this week. And I was in the kitchen last Saturday afternoon, and it was hot, and it was kind of crazy in there. And I was kind of lost in my own little world, and Alicia brings Beatrice in to say hello to me. And I held this puppy for 30 seconds, 45 seconds. She may have removed a layer of skin off my face from licking, and she was excited, and I was excited. It totally turned my day around. She is a doll. Whomever adopts Beatrice is going to be a very fortunate family. And just wait until you see her. And you can see her picture right now at bangorhumane.org. A mixed breed, only about 2 months old, black and white, and just a great dog, Tom. A wonderful dog. You'd love her.
She's beautiful. If I'm there, I'm going to have to adopt her. I can see that. She's just a gorgeous pup.
Well,
those eyes.
I know that you get off the air at 10 o'clock. I think that you should just pop over here.
Yeah, but you don't open till noon. Can I sneak in the back? You know, I know the back way in. I've been there.
They might make you sit out in the parking lot for 2 hours, but okay. I'll come keep you company, Tom.
Okay, all right. Well, good.
I also wanted to remind all of our golfing listeners that coming up on August 10th at Herman Meadow Golf Club is the second annual Blackstream Custom Cycles golf tournament to benefit Paws on Parade. Mm-hmm. And if you love animals and if you love golf, this is a great event for you. You're going to have a ball with these people. And the one last year raised a lot of money. This one, I understand, has already raised over $12,000.
Wow.
So there's still room. If you'd like to join in, get a team together, and you'll be playing for the animals at Bangor Humane Society. Check out all the details. The first thing you see when the website loads at bangorhumane.org, just click that link, and it will give you all the details.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. And I'm looking at all the cats. There are a ton of cat listings. The ones that do have photos look fantastic, and the rest just need to be seen. And 36 cats.
That's right.
Every base, I think,
that's
is covered.
A lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of cats. I think it's a good day to think about getting a cat.
I think so, too. I mean, if your family has been talking about adopting a cat, there's really never been a better time that I can think of right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I could tell you about a couple of the cats.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm just waiting. I'm having some website issues at the moment. Tom, hold on just a moment.
Okay.
I mean, I'm literally 6 feet away from them all. I could just go into the into the room and tell you about them, but I want to make sure that I get the details correct at bangorhumane.org. Boy, I apologize. I'm having trouble getting this page to load for me. Here we go. Hold on. All right. Now, Smokey, the very first one that you see.
Yeah.
Look at that face. Look at those eyes. Just an amazing, a wonderful cat, so cute. Smokey is about 3 years old, a female, only weighs about 10 pounds, So she is kind of tiny, but just adorable.
Mm.
And she is ready to be adopted today. There's also Chakra, and Chakra's got an incredible story. They've been working with her for well over a year. She does have some health challenges that she has overcome. But once you find out her story, she came in here in February of last year, and you find out what Chakra has been through and the lengths that they've gone to here at Bangor Humane Society to make sure that Chakra gets healthy again before she can be adopted. And whomever adopts Chakra, you know, is going to have to kind of help maintain that good health. She was diagnosed with diabetes shortly after she came, stuck to her insulin regimen and dietary requirements, and she is just a stunning-looking cat when you see her. Long-haired, just a beautiful face, green eyes, and read her story at bangorhumane.org.
Okay.
And there are 34 other cats on the website just waiting for you to check them out. And again, if you've been thinking about bringing a cat into your life, now would be a great time. Today would be an excellent day, I think, for an adoption.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, Mike, thank you for that.
Or multiple adoption.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't have to have just one cat. You could have several.
Absolutely. And some have come in together because, you know, they were from the same litter. And in many cases, we like to see them get adopted together so that they can, you know, live their lives together.
Yeah.
Okay. They'll be happier that way.
Good deal.
And so will you.
That's right. Mike, thank you. Appreciate everything you do over there and everybody else, and we'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you, Tom.
We'll talk
soon.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mike Dow from the Bangor Humane Society and the Big Morning Radio Show on weekday mornings, right, not 8 feet from where I'm sitting. Is where Mike Dow would be sitting if this was a weekday morning. Then of course I would be sitting on Rick Tyler's lap, so that wouldn't work out. But let's see. Somebody wants to know if there's a place to drop off blankets outside the open hours of BHS. I would. That's Bangor Humane. I would give them a call and ask. I'm sure there is. I know there's waste because there's people there most times. Let's see. We got a text message. Tom, I need to replace the sills in my garage. If I rented a jack and attempted to do this myself, what is my chance of success? I'm about a 3 on a scale of 10 on the Bob Vila scale. Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things you kind of learn by doing. It can be done. You don't need to rent a jack. You should, if you're a guy, you should have a bottle jack. And that's usually what folks will use as a bottle jack. And I would say a 5 or a 10 ton bottle jack would do a reasonable job of jacking up the one section at a time to be able to get the sill out. I'll tell you what I did years ago. I had the house I was in prior to the one I'm in now, it needed new sills. And in the process, and it really technically needed new floors. So I decided that we're going to replace the floor. I mean, this floor was really, this was an ancient house. And if you went down in the basement, there were probably 15. This is a house that was... 22 by 28, I think. It wasn't a big footprint. I would say there were 15 wooden posts holding the floor up. And you could still, if you had a golf ball or a tennis ball or something, you set it on one side of the house, it would roll. It was all over the place. So I decided, right or wrong, to replace the floor. There's no small project. To replace the first floor on a two-story house. And what I wound up doing was removing the floor. So I got to a point where if you opened the door and you stepped inside, you'd fall right into the basement. Everything was gone. I removed the whole thing. And these were massive old timbers. But they were really bad. They were really rotted. And the floor was on level. So once that was done, I decided, well, we needed to replace the sills. And what we did was we made box beams instead of using solid pressure-treated timbers, which we could have done. I made box beams that are pressure-treated and had one full length. I could stagger the joints. I could, you know, back up joints, and because it was hollow in the center with little mini studs inside of it. It was very structural. And what we wound up doing to lift the building up, I originally thought, well, I'm going to put two by tens on the outside of the building, and I was going to lag them into the studs. And I tried that, and I tested it, and it didn't work. The lags pulled right out as soon as you tried to jack up the building. So I wound up but again, this was a heavy building with a lot of lumber. I think in a garage you could probably lag onto the face of the studs and be okay, but we wound up bolting through each stud with a massive bolt. Thank you, Martins. You know, Martins is there with the, when you need something stupid like that, a big, you know, it was, I don't know, 8-inch bolt, half inch bolt with a, with, you know, a bolt and washers and nuts and the whole thing. And I bolted through each stud, and then we were able to use every bottle jack, I think, in Waldo County to lift up the building. And we did it in sections. And we did the same thing when we replaced the sills. Before we did the floor, we just set the sills in, removed the old sills, which were not hard to take out because they were pretty funky, and did one side at a time. And then the next step, at some point I thought, you know, this basement isn't quite tall enough for me to stand up, but the sill was technically about an 8x8. So if I put the floor was kind of mortised into the sills originally, you know, from God knows when. So if I put the new floor joists on top of the sill, I bought myself 7 1/4 inches, 8 inches. I could stand in the basement, and that's what we did. And so the sills could go in relatively easily, but then we had to lift the building 8 inches because we had subfloor on top of the joists as well, so we could set the walls back down on it. And we had a crew and a lot of bottle jacks. And it wasn't the best way to lift the building up 8 inches, but we were able to accomplish it. But just replacing a sill, you only have to get a fraction of an inch to be able to pull the old sill out. You don't have to go up 8 inches. You know, again, 1/4 inch, as long as you – and. In our office, the building where we are, we sell cars, I had a sill that, excuse me, one sill? I think it was one sill was gone. And I was able to manipulate that without it jacking the building up even. It was so far gone that it was very easy to cut things apart and get the new sill in. It's a little bit of pounding with a big hammer, but we got it done. And obviously we use pressure treated. So I would get, like I say, about a 5-ton bottle jack. They're not expensive. It doesn't cost a lot of money. And I was using, for a lot of the work I was doing after the floor, I was jacking up walls. There was a ring beam for the second floor, and I was jacking that up so we could remove sections of the wall that we had to replace. And there I was using not a bottle jack, but an automotive jack with a 4x4 on top of it, and that worked out well. So I hope that helps. That isn't too confusing. It is it's an interesting process, and if you just take your time, you can't do too much serious damage, he said optimistically. Invest in recip saw blades. Get a wide, you know, you're going to need some bimetal blades for cutting through the fasteners if there are any intact still, and you're also going to need some long wood cutting blades. So that'll get you there. We got a couple minutes left. My friend Kurt is fixing up a house that he has, and he had the well pump sorted out, and I went over, and we got all the water running, and his kitchen faucet didn't work, so I've got to get over there. I'm going to do the kitchen faucet. It hopefully will go. You know, it's a 5-minute job, but he offered me the opportunity to go up on the third floor, to on the outside, to seal holes where the squirrels are coming in. I said no. That my deal is you're lucky to get me to crawl in underneath the kitchen sink. I ain't going outside. But this is why I go back to something from a couple months ago. I really need to have a bucket truck. If I had a bucket truck, I'd probably do it. But I don't have one. Maybe Kurt, I should talk to Kurt. Maybe he'd want to buy one for me. You know, it might be fun. Because everybody should have a bucket truck. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. If you have a bucket truck, God knows the uses you would find for it. And I have to say, I am envious of any person who's got one. When the CMP guy came to do work at my house and he had the bucket truck, I almost wanted to ask if I could use it, but I didn't do that. Oh, what else we got? Just quickly, guilty pleasure on a hot day, hot week, not wanting to do much after work. I came across the movie Oppenheimer, and I said, oh, wow, this is on. I got to watch it. I want to see this. I wanted to see this movie. I've seen enough, you know, documentaries. I want to see the movie. It was really good, except it was 3 hours long, and I watched it in one shot. Not pretty much in one shot. I stopped it a couple times to go drink water and go to the bathroom because that was a long haul. But it was a really good movie. Very well done. If you get a chance to see it, by all means, do. It tells you a lot about where we were. Back 70 years ago, 80 years ago, my God. All right, it's hot and cold. We're going to be back in a little bit. We're going to take a break for the news and weather and all that good stuff. Stay with us.
By the banks of her own lagoon. Didn't anybody tell?
we're back. It's 9:06, hot, cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Hour number two has begun. If you made it through the first hour, God bless you. Second hour could be just worse. I've got a couple of messages here. Let's see. Where we go? There we go. Okay, first one. Tom, I got pulled over for speeding. I'm thinking, how is this my fault? But I go on. If you answered my question about sill replacement, I missed it. There's a lot of police out this year, and you found that out. So bottom line is, first of all, you missed a great story. What can I say? You missed a fantastically long-winded story about sill replacement. But bottom line is, I think if you got maybe a 5-ton bottle jack and you lagged or screwed some 2x, I would say 6s, to your garage studs, you should be able to lift it. You don't have to lift it very high, you know, a fraction of an inch. If you get the siding off on the outside at the sill level, you should be able to do it. You may have to cut I assume there's some kind of anchors that are holding the sill in place. You may have to cut those or work around them, maybe cut around them and then notch. It could get a little hairy getting all that done. But the short answer is you should be able to do it. It's not rocket science. Let's see. Also, looking for a light-duty drill press to fit over my power drill. Any recommendations? I don't have any specific recommendations. I looked a little bit. I've seen them. Excuse me. They're fair. I would check. You know, I looked. Home Depot's got some available, but I would really look on eBay. And I did not check eBay, but I'm sure somebody has them. I would say drill press attachment would be the operative words. So. In the process of just looking for that, I went on the Home Depot site because that's, an easy one to get to. And they have drill presses, and the prices are just kind of crazy. And I have a drill press that I bought in, 1985, I think. And it went through the fire. And I couldn't remember if we still had it because it had been through the fire, and we do, and it still works. It's still fine. And it was not a well-made piece of it was Black & Decker. I remember that. It wasn't really well-built. It was a bench drill press. It sits on the bench. You could bolt it down, I guess, if you needed to. It's got an adjustable bed, and it's got a belt that you can adjust for all kinds of different pulley settings for different speeds. And I think at the time I paid $49 for it, which I winced a little bit back in 1985, but it has stood the test of time. I didn't want to talk about what they are now. And I did not check Harbor Freight, which would be the other place I would look at for a regular drill press. But I could see why you would just want to get an add-on for your drill because they are kind of pricey. Having said all that, I have seldom used a drill press in the past 10 years. But if you need one, you need one. So the other option, and I do see them pop up on Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace, is to pick up a used one, similar to what I have, a bench type one that, for a freestanding one, a floor mount unit is going to be expensive. The good news about drill presses is they last forever. So I hope that helps there. I picked up a book, and this is going a far afield from regular stuff that I talk about other than it is banjo-related. It's called Memories of John Hartford. John Hartford, if you're not aware, is the guy who wrote Gentle on My Mind, used to be on the Glenn Campbell Show, if you're old enough to remember that. He was the banjo player, a very famous bluegrass musician, and a fellow who toured with his band, who was another banjo player. John had, I think, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and as the disease was progressing, he was playing fewer and fewer instruments, but continued touring. There's I think it's a video somewhere of him He's on a concert, and he says, you know, I know people are here to see if I'm still alive. And he says, I can't die yet because we're booked into next April. He was just that kind of guy. I met him twice. I interviewed him both times. Second time, the interview got published. You got probably find it online on the Banjo newsletter. If you put in John Hartford and Banjo newsletter, you'd find the interview. It was hard not to be just... there was a thing on Saturday Night Live years ago where Chris Farley was interviewing Paul McCartney, and he was just tongue-tied because he was so overwhelmed sitting there with Paul McCartney. It was really hard to fight that and not be tongue-tied. And just to give you an idea of the kind of guy John Hartford was, he was touring with the Glen Campbell Good Time Hour. They were in Orono, Maine on January 30th, which was my daughter Maria's birthday. She was 7 years old. I couldn't leave to go till she went to bed because it was, you know, her birthday. And she was upset that I didn't bring her with me. And there was a blizzard going on that night, and I hightail it up there. John has already done his set, and he's shuffling around backstage. He says, I like to do interviews before, you know, I perform because, you know, I'm kind of spent. And he looked tired, and I didn't know that he was ill. He wasn't that ill at this point, but he was not, you know, well. And we talked, and we start talking banjos, and he perked right up. We talked for about 45 minutes till it was time for him to go on for the finale. And then he just kind of puffed up and went back out on stage. But he says, would it be okay if I gave you my home phone number? Yeah, I guess so, John. I guess that'd be okay. And we spoke for a couple hours on the phone after he was off the tour. And a nice article came out about it. I got a lot more questions now, but we don't have any more, so I can't go there. That SNL skit was one of the good ones. It was. And I cringe, though, when I saw it because I know how – and I'm sure Chris Farley was sincere in the way he was performing with Paul McCartney because, oh, my goodness. But, you know, he's just a guy. He's just a guy. He happens to have written one of the most famous songs ever, as Paul McCartney has written many. The thing was, I was a kid. I think I was 13 years old when that song came out. And it was on the Glen Campbell show, and it just hit you, hit me. And he talked about when he was a kid, my age, as a matter of fact, when I found him hearing Flat and Scruggs on the radio, and he said this in the interview to me, it was like lightning coming out of the radio. It was just electric. And at the end, the song that he heard on the radio was the Flint Hill Special. And at the end, as he was, you know, really going and fading, he lived in Madison, Tennessee, near Nashville. All these musicians would come to spend time with him. And there's Earl Scruggs there. And he just wants Earl Scruggs to play Flint Hill Special. And you know, he could hardly talk. Flint Hill Special. What a guy. He was something else. Anyway, we got to take a break because I just talked through everything, don't I? It is Hot and Cold, though, Saturday morning. Pete will be with us shortly. And there's something to look forward to right there. We'll be right back.
Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra mile.
All right, we're back, and Pete, is that you? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're on
is
the
it
air.
Tom?
Yes, it is.
Hi. Hi. I've got a question about a banjo.
Okay.
I inherited it through my father's death, and it was in pieces, and he had always talked about this great banjo, and he was going to have it put back together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find somebody that could do that for me.
How many pieces?
And basically, the neck, the head is intact, and the neck needs to be reattached with the bolt and a rod sort of assembly, and then the thing that holds all the strings in place needs to be put back on.
All right. So, you know where my place of business is?
Yes.
Bring it down. I'll take a look at it.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Okay. Normal business hours during the week?
Yeah, I'm there from 9 to 4, Monday through Friday. Pete and Marie are there if I'm not there. So, if I'm not there, just leave your number, and I'll touch base after I look at it. It should go right back together from what you're describing.
Okay. All right. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Yeah, twist my arm. Put a banjo together. Oh, no, do I have to? Okay. No, unfortunately, I'll never make money fixing banjos because here's the thing. If I bump into somebody who has gotten an instrument and wants to learn how to play, I want to make sure that instrument is set up so it doesn't throw a lot of roadblocks at them. And here's the deal. This comes from my experience. When I was a kid, I was 13. It was same time around the John Hartford thing. I got a banjo and it wasn't bad. It was a $35 K banjo. I actually took a bus to New York City with my friend, Ben LaMarca. He knew his way around New York City, and the two of us go off to New York City. I would never let my kids do that, but I did. So I guess it was okay. But it was an okay banjo. But the action was too high and the neck was too skinny. The action being too high was the big one because it just hurt to play. And I know now that instrument, which I almost want to get one back to fool with, you could adjust the action on the neck. Well, I spent a lot of time. That's what I, as I put together instruments now, spent a lot of time trying to get the action. The action is the string, let's call it the string height. The elevation, the string is off the frets. And you want it, usually you want it as low as possible without any interference as you push down on the strings. So there's a happy medium that it varies from instrument to instrument. But if you just bought one and you say, you know what, I want to play like Earl Scruggs or I want to play like Pete Seeger or whatever, and you don't know anything about the physical instrument, that's a deal. It could be a deal breaker because it's just too challenging to play because the instrument's not set up well. And all instruments, usually there's some wiggle in there that you can play to get things set up. And even if... I mean, sometimes it might require some surgery on the instrument, but generally not. Generally, there's just, things to tweak and do whatever. The other thing, and this was one I discovered by myself, and I bumped into it so many times. In case you have a banjo out there and you don't want to have me mess with it, there's not a lot I know what I'm doing about with
about whatever, but I do know I know a little bit about banjos, but and I figured this one out by myself. It didn't sound real good when I first got it, and I just started tightening up the head, that white part that looks like a drum. And there's a point you get to where all of a sudden the sound pops. And it's conceivable you could break the head, which happens. It's not a big deal. They're replaceable. Takes a little bit of time, and you have to, you know, and I think I might have actually broken the head on one. But the cool part about these instruments, you could take them apart, you put them back together. But at some point when the head is at the right tension, this thing comes to life. So what you might wind up buying that sounds awful, you know, it doesn't sound very good. If you tighten things up, you set it up the way it's supposed, the way God wanted banjos to be, all of a sudden the sound comes out. And that happened to me. And I, you know, it's one of those things you kind of lose track of sometimes. And I had gotten an instrument. I actually traded it with John Bernunzio, which, by the way, one of my latest is at Bernunzio Vintage Instruments. It's Bernunzio.com. It's for sale. I traded with him for a bluegrass banjo. And I got it, and it didn't sound good. And I just kind of, it was a nice looking instrument. It's got a carved heel on the neck. It's got nice inlays. And it was a maple banjo, which I was interested in the look at the time. And it didn't sound that good. And the action was good on it. The strings were very low, as a matter of fact. It was a very playable banjo. And I had it in a case, I think, under the bed or in the closet or something. And it just kind of irked me that I wasn't using it. And I took it out one day, and I just started tightening the head. And it was something I was just doing by feel. There are gauges you can use to measure exactly, and I do use that a lot now. But I can do it by feel without using the gauge. And I just started tightening the head. And all of a sudden, this bluegrass instrument started to peel the wallpaper off the walls. The sound was just so dramatic. And my dear wife actually complained about it being so loud that I don't play it that much because it's that kind of thing. So anyway, there's that. But then there's also this. I see the moon rising. It may not be a bad moon rising. But it would be Pete. Pete, you there? Did we lose him? We lost Pete? Oh, man. You know, I queued up the music, and maybe he hung up. All right, let's turn the music off. We may have to do it over. But I got to take a break here in a moment anyway. Why don't we get the break out of the way? You know, I get all excited. Pete's there. And let's go over to, let's give this a go just to see. I don't think this is Pete, but we'll give it a go. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
How dare you insinuate that this is not Pete?
Well, hang on. Now I got to put the damn music back up again.
Now, wait. It's okay. Ruined. The whole rhythm vibe is ruined. Well, I've got three numbers in here. I called the first one. It says voicemail's not active and hangs up on me. Second one asked for an extension. Now I got to call in on the regular line.
Like a regular peon, huh?
Like regular people. You know, I'm not calling into the Voice of Maine. I am the Voice of Maine.
That's what I'm afraid of.
That's why I should have a line.
Okay. Well, I thought you had a line. I don't know. I'm going to confirm the number with you. Matter of fact, I'm going to write it down right now and give it to you later. Okay?
Okay. I'll get rid of all other numbers.
All right. Because there's, I know Mike told me that Rick was being challenged by the phone system last week, so that may be part of what's going on.
I figured something was a little bit messed up.
Yeah. So, hey, Pete.
Do you have some? Hey.
Yeah.
So what's going on? You know, I was driving the other day, right?
Yeah.
I was heading up into Bangor, and it was storming out. I was watching off in the distance to see where the storm was going to come. And I've never noticed this before, but I was on 1A, and way off in the distance, I saw windmills.
Yeah.
I've never noticed those before. And they weren't spinning.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that got me thinking, because on the way, on 1A, they're putting a solar farm in up in Prospect.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking about, like, you know, footprint-wise, a bunch of windmills and a solar farm are probably somewhat comparable, right?
Mm.
And I would assume when the windmills are going, like, they probably generate more electricity than the solar farm when they're going.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Not compared to the cost of them, but let's say they were free or something like that. But it got me thinking, I'm like, they don't make a lot of sense to me. And this isn't a Sears Island thing, but it's like if something goes wrong with the windmill has to be shut off, right? And then you got to get a guy probably up from Massachusetts to come work on the windmill or to look at it and then get a part and then fix it. Whereas if you got a solar farm and something goes wrong with part of the solar farm, there's probably 500 solar techs within 100 miles, and any one of them can come and just bypass that section, and the rest of the grid is still generating electricity.
Well, yeah, I should take a break, but we'll just deal with this briefly, and then we can talk about it after the break. Obviously, you get a lot of energy coming out of a windmill when it's functioning. A terrestrial windmill, a windmill that's on land, doesn't do anything near what one off the coast would do, where the wind resource is steady. And that's why there's this big push. Whether or not it's going to fly is another story on any number of levels, but that's not mine to say. We'll see what happens. The solar resource is, you know, the sun's out, it's working. You may not like them, but they do something. And I can bear witness to that, and I think a lot of other people can too. But we got to take a break, so I'm going to stop there before we get too wound up. I did get a text message here that said the banjo doctor, and maybe that should be the name of the show, because I've had banjo questions this morning. So
really,
yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that.
You live it, man, every day. Matter of fact, we got somebody dropping off a banjo next week for me to look at put back together, which will be fun. Nice diversion from putting together banjos all week. All right, it's hot and cold Saturday morning. Pete is here, so you know it's a good day. We'll be right back. Back. It is, I gotta hit the button here. We gotta talk to Pete. There we go. 9:37. Good morning again, Pete.
Good morning.
Jeez, don't scream into the phone. Calm down.
Did I come through loud?
Yeah, very loud.
I apologize. That's on you. It sounds fine here.
Okay.
But getting back to the solar farm wind thing, thought was this is what?
No, go ahead. Huh?
Okay. I wasn't sure if my volume was messed up again.
Yeah.
My thought was this is, you know, if you're talking about the difference between a windmill and a solar farm, a windmill has moving parts, a solar farm doesn't. And working in cars, I can tell you anything that moves will break.
That's true.
Whereas, like, solar panels degrade at a rate of, like, what is it, like 0.5% per year?
Yeah. A third, so you could have a third to a half percent a year. It's pretty low, which, I mean...
We'll round up and call it a half a percent. So that's like over the course of 40 years, you're still going to be getting 80% output from the panel, provided everything else is working all right. But my thought is this. I predict before the year 2100, we'll long be gone, but before the year 2100, we will have maybe not a super safe, but a stable fusion reactor, right?
Okay.
And nuclear power will become the thing, right? And so obviously we've got renewable infrastructure. We're not going to take that down unless we have to. But let's say at some point some of these municipalities, they want the territory back, occupying, you know, these wind farms and solar farms. Taking a wind farm down, I can't help but imagine that's probably a big deal. Whereas if you're taking a solar farm down, you not only is it easy because it's ground level, but you can resell everything involved.
Yeah.
All the panels, all the inverters, all the racks, all that stuff can be sold.
Yeah. I agree.
I mean, people would be lined up for it. Okay. I'm not debating the Sears Island thing they want to do. I'm just saying windmills as a whole don't seem to make as much sense to me as the solar farms do.
Okay, Governor. All right, so I've got a message here that's a little bit closer to home for you. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, guys. I live in Frankfort next to Swan Lake, have been a frequent listener to your show and enjoy it. This summer is a time to get the son a first-time used car. But for the life of me, we can't figure out what the name of the shop your son works at and where, and can we stop by and look? If you can text me back, if you're not allowed to say it on the air. Oh, we're allowed to say it on the air.
Nepotism.
But car shopping for our teenager is our priority this summer. So, go for it, Pete.
Our shop is called American Solar Technics, which makes very good sense if you think about it as far as a cars dealer goes. We're located at 24 U.S. Route 1 in Stockton Springs, Maine, right across the street from Just Barb's restaurant.
Okay.
So if you find Just Barb's, you found us.
Okay.
And our lot is paved. It's the fresh pavement.
Pete.
The freshest pavement in Stockton.
Pete has been meticulous about this driveway, I have to admit.
I truly have hit middle age. I'm just all about this asphalt. I clean things off and I walk around and look at it. If there's a little bit that gets messed up, I go stamp it back down.
Yeah.
I hose it down when it's hot off.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, I know it'll be fine if I don't do anything, but I just I just want to keep it nice.
Well, it is nice, I have to say. This past week, when it was nice and hot out, there was nothing better than being out on that damn pavement. But that's okay.
But, yes, you can come by any time and look at cars, even if we're not open. The cars are still here.
Yep.
And they all have cut sheets in the windows with the mileage and the price and anything noteworthy that we replaced on them.
And so. Probably next week we'll have that smart car ready.
Yay.
I told a story about, I think we've got a Russian radio in that car, because I can't
figure out. Yeah, we can't figure out how to change the language back to all the controls and everything. All the important stuff in the car is in English.
Yeah.
But the radio is in whatever.
Cyrillic and Russian.
Cyrillic.
And Russian. So it's been an interesting car week, because we got three cars in. They're not ready for sale yet, but they will be. And very quickly, because they're what you would call your cream puffs.
Yeah, one in particular that I really like is we got a Toyota Venza in, okay?
Yeah.
The first Venza we've gotten through. I've looked at them at the auction a couple of times. I've driven them around. I like them. They're very, very smooth riding. They're not, I don't know what you would call it. It's not, I guess it's a cross between a station wagon and an SUV.
Yeah.
This one's front wheel drive. It's a six cylinder. And here's the kicker. It's got 132K on it, something like that. And it is from Florida.
Mm.
And when I say it's from Florida, I don't mean it was from Florida. It was up here for 2 years, and now it's you know, a main car. I mean, it looks like this is the year it came up from Florida. I looked underneath it, and again, it's an 09. But I looked underneath it, and it looked factory new under there.
We took pictures. Like, we have pictures on our ad. We did undercoat it, but we took pictures before we undercoated it. It was that clean.
Yeah, and we undercoated it anyway, because if we don't undercoat it, I'll guarantee the person won't undercoat it.
Yeah.
Because it looks good. There's no rust. So they'll think, oh, I don't have to undercoat it. You do have to undercoat it. This is the difference between $2,000 worth of body work and $200 in touch up, you know, 10 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for sure.
You got to keep it. It's I know it's hard because you don't see it, and it's a couple $100, you know, every fall, but it's better than letting the car rust out and watching that engine, you know, get pushed out to sea on an iceberg.
Yeah.
Metaphorically, you don't actually do that to get rid of engines.
Yeah. And you know, here's the thing. Pete picked out this car. And Pete, I like sending Pete up to the auction to check out cars because he's a little more picky than I am. I will go look at cars, and I'd say, well,
you look at cars that you would buy and be comfortable with. And I'm looking at them from the discerning eye of the buyer.
And or I would say, oh, I can fix that. And that inevitably costs a fair bit of money to me and the company. and at any rate, it's worth sending Pete up to the auction to look at stuff. As a matter of fact, we were both up there this week, and there were a couple of cars that we picked up that Pete was looking at the moment. I just peeked at him real quick, and I said, I think we like those, don't we? And he agreed, and I left and let him continue. And we did well. So we've got, because cars are starting to really move now, and we're trying to keep up supply so we don't run out, which would not be fun.
It's the pavement.
It's the how nice the pavement looks, because there's somebody out there blowing pine needles off the pavement every day.
Yeah, I go out there with the leaf blower. Yeah, I clear everything.
I had to get Pete a leaf blower. So he could blow the pine needles off the pavement.
Yeah, I tried sweeping the pine needles off, and they just all got caught in the broom. And then I tried blowing them off with the hose, and that wasn't working. Yeah.
So
I was like, I need equipment.
Yeah.
So a question that I can't Google because I'll get in trouble.
Okay.
Can I buy, like, I guess I'll throw the word safe in there. Can I buy safe uranium somewhere?
Yeah, you know, and you know
where can I buy a piece of uranium?
You know who has it for sale, and you should contact the guy.
Iran, but where else?
No. In the United States, you remember the guy who you said he worked at Area 51. His name was Bob Lazar, Lazar.
No, I don't remember any of this.
This guy, this is in the 80s. He came out and said he worked at Area 51, and he had a lot of credibility. And then he the government kind of. So I don't know if it's true or not, but he sells stuff like that. So you'd have to Google his name, Lazar, Bob Lazar. He sells weird material. He doesn't sell, obviously, dangerous stuff, but it's worth checking out his website just because it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't want, like, yellow cake uranium. I want just, like, a piece of uranium.
Okay, is this because I saw we have both now have seen the movie Oppenheimer? You got a centrifuge?
No, it's not Oppenheimer. It was I saw a video. There's these videos online of stuff getting crushed by a hydraulic press.
Yeah,
I don't know why they do it, but they do. And there was one. It was a 500 ton press, all right, and it was a sphere of uranium, and it split the press and formed around it. It formed like the sphere came out absolutely perfect. So, and it withstood like 500 tons, more than 500 tons of pressure because it split the press in half. And like there was a form inside the press when they lifted it back up of the sphere. Yeah. And I was thinking that'd be a great material to like make stuff out of.
Okay. Well, don't they make.
I don't know how you would make it into things, but I'm like, I kind of just want a piece of uranium now just to have it.
Don't they have. Doesn't the military have some kind of gun that shoots depleted uranium because it's so hard?
The shells and M1s were made of depleted uranium, I believe.
Okay. All right. Well, we learned something today, huh? I'm not finding Bob's website here. Maybe he's no longer doing that, but this is a stupid question.
Selling it than somebody else. You know what it is? It's not even uranium, but he's just selling chunks of iron or something.
Have you checked eBay?
I haven't. The thing is, I don't want to look up where to buy uranium online because I know that's getting sent to some file somewhere.
Well,
you know?
Let me check here at the studio where Rick will get arrested.
record that it's not for anything bad. It's just Pete's weird and likes weird stuff. And listen, let me throw this out there right now. If somebody's listening in the woods and they have a piece of uranium, and they don't know if it's radioactive or not. Don't bring that into me. I don't want you. You keep yours, okay? I want one that's verified, not radioactive.
Well, you know what I'm finding on eBay is uranium glass. Have you seen that? It glows in the dark.
I've seen that a lot, actually.
That's cool.
If you get a little UV flashlight, you go around to antique shops and you shine it on marbles and glass and stuff. If it glows green, it's uranium glass.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to get one of those. That looks really cool. But then again,
most tickers do that though. They all have the UV flashlights now.
Yeah. So, well, Pete, what else we got going on? There's a lot of uranium glass. All right, I got to stop looking. I don't need any uranium glass.
I wonder what would happen if you drank out of those glasses. Anything? Probably not.
I don't think so. I think it's relatively. I can't imagine that you would want to live with a big collection of uranium glass, although it would look kind of cool. And the thing that makes me think that is I also, after watching Oppenheimer a couple weeks earlier, I watched a movie about Marie Curie, who discovered uranium.
Didn't she glow or something? Or her body was radioactive?
She was not well. She had all kinds of cancer. She slept with a little vial of radium that glowed in the dark. Not a good thing. This is not something that somebody should do. But it was interesting because that was at a time when if you were a woman, you were not considered a proper person to be a scientist, and the Nobel Prize didn't want to give her. She shared first Nobel Prize with her husband. He would not accept it without her because she, obviously was integral in the work they did. And it was an interesting challenge and a very brilliant person. We got a few moments left. What else we got out there for cars do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about cars? Sure we do.
Yeah, why not? Well, what do we got to
the
meet?
The Venza is the Venza the only new one that's out there this week?
The Venza is the only new one that went out this week. The white, you know what though, is like, I haven't been on in a couple weeks. We put out a white 14 that's a rebuilt title, but I think it's got. I'm sorry, I can't remember the miles off the top of my head. It's like
130,000
miles.
Yeah,
129,000 miles. That one's rebuilt, so it's a little. You know, if you look closely, it's, a little bit on the. Driver's front fender there might look a little lumpy, but otherwise it runs and drives great. So if you take into account the rebuilt concession and the price, that's a good way to get a Prius with a 14 Prius with lower miles.
Yeah, true. We have a couple that are almost ready to go. We've got a great starter car, I guess, which would be a 2006 Lexus hybrid that. I have put way too much into, so we're selling it, and it's got 286,000 miles. It was my semi-daily driver. I used it whenever I needed to be in an SUV, which was at least a couple times a week, and just a nice car. We did a whole bunch of suspension work to it last week, and just cleaning it up a bit. It was pretty clean, because, like I say, it was a car that I used. We did some paint touch up on it, and it's did a whole a year ago. We did new tires and stuff, and I probably put maybe 1,000 miles on it in a year. I haven't put many miles on it, but that's going out probably beginning of next week. You could look at it though today, even if you wanted to. We haven't written it.
But you can't drive it or buy it today, so you might as well wait till next week.
Yeah, you can look at it. But what else we got that's going out? You know what's going out next week for sure. We're just going to do some touch-up on it cleaning-wise. It's a 2016 Toyota Corolla. I don't remember the miles on that. Do you?
Well, I don't know. It's like 130 or something like that, yeah.
And that one, that was a weird car.
Yeah.
How would you I'm going to leave it to you to describe it because I am at a loss as to how do I sell that car?
I don't know. I don't even know what the price on it's going to be yet. But you know what? I do have that's out for sale.
Yeah.
I've got a 2018 Yaris IA. That's got like 75,000 miles on it, and that's $11,995. What else have I got? I got two nice RAV4s. I got an 18 hybrid and a 15 gas.
Okay.
And I've got the cars are going out a little faster. They're selling a little faster than they're going out this month.
Yeah.
We've got the Prius V is pending. The plug-in Prius is pending. There's a 15 Prius 3 over there that's pretty nice with about 185K on it. A gray, I want to say 2013 Prius. We've got a lot of Priuses right now.
Go figure, huh?
But, yeah, if you check the website, which is just Prius.store, you'll see everything on there, gas and hybrid.
Well, I'm going to make a management claim right now. Go back to the 16 Corolla. It's going to be well under 10 grand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Factory paint.
It had cosmetic challenges. Whoever had it just abused the body and just had small dents and stuff, which we cleaned up best we could.
I wouldn't necessarily say it was abuse. It just had dents.
Not
accident dents, just little dents, a shopping cart kind of thing. Or
like, let's roll a shopping cart on the roof and put some dents in it. It was just weird. But the car, my mechanic really liked it. He thought it ran good. I knew it ran
solid.
Good. It's a very solid car. It was in good shape. Rust-wise, obviously, it's a 16. It hadn't been exposed that much. We undercoated it. We've done a reasonable bit. Well, just cleaning it up and having it ready, and everything was primarily cosmetic. So and it looks reasonably decent now, but the price is going to reflect the cosmetics. I'm trying to say this in a diplomatic way that
you're failing.
Anyway,
there's a little shopping cart around the roof. I'm like, it doesn't look like that.
No, it doesn't, but it's just, it is what it is. It's something to see. It's a sight to see is what it is, Pete. Mm. All right. We're out of time.
Perfect.
Perfect.
We covered uranium, solar power, cars, banjos.
I'm not finding any uranium metal. We got to work on that one, I guess.
Not from my home computer, I'm not.
Well, Rick's going to be seeing the guys in the black suits next week. All right, Pete, thank you. We've set the tone here for the week. See you next week. Thank you. Everybody out there, have a great week. Enjoy the weather. The rain seems pretty good to me.
One little miracle a day is all I need. Tea rubbles more or less be all the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine.